You're listening to WMCA New York. This hour of programming is paid for by the Talkline Communications Network.
Welcome to Headlines, a live debate of current events, a weekly interactive program on some of the most controversial breaking issues of today. Here now is your host, Doug Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lights.
Good vach. This is Zev Brenner, and we have the privilege of David Lichtenstein. Let me wish you a special mazel tov, and this is the inaugural premiere program, weekly, called Headlines. We're going to cover some very important contemporary halachic issues, and tonight, Reb Dov, we'll begin with, I guess, your thoughts on racial profiling. Good vach.
Good vach. Everybody's been watching the news, the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, Missouri, as well as the recent Eric Garner killing here in New York City. And I'd like to talk about what is the halachic view of both discrimination and, to a lesser extent, racial profiling. Clearly, these are matters which are somewhat modern topics, but there is little that is not addressed in the Torah that, you know, in some type of a way that we can't apply it to current events. And in particular, I'd like to examine where do we in our communities and in our societies, where do we have discrimination that we can sort of look inwardly as a community and say, where is this relevant to us? And let me give you a few examples, and certainly feel free to call in and give me your own. But some that come to mind is, certainly in schools and yeshivas, there are many that will exclude certain types of parents. They say, this parent, you know, dresses in a certain way. I remember coming from communities where if the parents wore a certain color shirt, their children, even though their children were perfectly qualified, would not be allowed into the school. I know in Shidduchim, there are many times where if you were darker skinned or people who would not do Shidduchim with Sfardim or Ashkenazim would not do Shidduchim with Ashkenazim. I was recently involved in a case where a family, a very prominent Ashkenazi family, their daughter was introduced to a Sfardi boy outside, you know, wasn't through a Shadchan, and they became enamored with each other, and the father announced that if any of the children went to the chasana or indeed had anything to do with the couple post-marriage, they would be excommunicated from the family, and nobody showed up by the wedding. What's the halachic view of discrimination in schools and shidduchim? There are many people who with balei tshuva, many balei tshuva feel discriminated against. What is our societal view, but what is our the halachic view towards discrimination? And you can't open up a Shulchan Aruch and look for hilchos discrimination. So we have to look for other examples of it. Now, how do we define discrimination? Well, if you look in Webster's, discrimination would be defined as making a distinction in favor of or against a person or thing based upon the group, class, or category to which it belongs, rather than individual merit. So, for example, in each of the above cases, you say, I don't want to let your child into school, not because your child isn't qualified, but because I think that as a parent, you're not the type of parent that as a school, we would be proud to have you as a parent in our school, even though your child may be very qualified. Or the color of your skin is such that you're a wonderful boy, but it's sort of, it would a little bit make me feel funny to have you walking around with my daughter, even though you're totally qualified. Or alternatively, you're a Baal Tshuva and Sapast Mechnisht, it doesn't seem that you rise to the level, the bar of qualifications where I would like you, to where I would show up in Shul and would be proud to have you as my Mechutin. How do we halachically, so this is clearly where the person themselves is meritorious, but they come from a class or a group that, or a category, and I'm judging them based on that rather than their individuality. Now, why do we, by the way, why do we discriminate? Well, you know, one, there are many reasons, but, you know, psychology, there's something called attribution fallacy. An attribution fallacy is that we all have the tendency to judge ourselves much more favorably than our neighbors. For example, if we go through a light, we'll say something like, you know, it was sort of, it was almost, it was really yellow, it was turning red. But if we see somebody else going through a light, we say, that's really a bad driver. That's somebody who's callous and, you know, is inconsiderate about other drivers and the law. You know, I've heard a story where, you know, they call a woman and they'll say, how is your daughter? She just got married. And she'll say, oh, my daughter, she married the most wonderful boy. Really, like, what do you mean? Oh, my son-in-law, every night he takes my daughter out to eat. He gives her as much money as she needs for shopping. Help at home, as much help as she needs. He's wonderful. And your son? My son, he mamish married a klafta, a witch. What do you mean? All she does is she doesn't want to cook. She wants to be taken out to eat. She wants money to go out shopping. And all she does is she wants help at home. She doesn't want to clean. That's called attributional fallacy. Something that when we see it in ourselves, we think it's wonderful. When we see it in others, we think it's bad. And that sort of leads to discrimination. When we just have a bad eye, we look with an ayin ra at other people. What is halachically, can we or can't we discriminate? So let's look at possible halachic sources for it. And the first thing that would come to mind is the concept of ahavta l'reyecha kamocha, love thy neighbor as thyself. Now this is in Leviticus and Vayikra and Kedoshim, and the pasuk says, "Love thy neighbor as thyself." The question is this a metaphor, or is it halachically accepted? So the Ramban Nachmanides says it's hyperbole; it's impossible, and he bases it on a few facts. He says there is another halacha which would seem to contradict this, and what's that halacha? The famous ruling, two people are in the desert and it's hot and they need water, and one of them is carrying a jug of water and there's only enough water for one of them. So the ruling is, Hayecha Kodman, he does not have to share the water with the other party, but he can keep it for himself. So the Ramban, yes, Nachmanides, yes, he says, if you have to love your neighbor like yourself, he says, like yourself literally, then you would have to give the other person the water or share the water. He says, it must be then that this is hyperbole because it would be a contradiction in law. Additionally, let me ask you a question. Let's say your daughter turns 18, and on your daughter's 18th birthday, you would buy her a car. A lot of people, their daughter becomes of age, they buy her a car. Would you, when your neighbor's daughter turns 18, would you buy her a car as well? So if it was literal, love thy neighbor as you love thyself, you would have to buy your neighbor's child a car as well. So Nachmanides therefore says, it's just hyperbole, it's don't take it literally. And what does it mean? It means rejoice in your neighbor's joy, just as you would rejoice in your own joy, but don't learn anything of consequence from it. Now, the Rambam, Maimonides, doesn't agree with this, and he very cleverly answers the two questions that Nachmanides poses. And it's really, by the way, it's based on a Talmud, a Gemara in Shabbos, that says as follows, a very famous Gemara. The Gemara says that somebody came to Hillel, and he asked him, teach me the entire Torah while standing on one leg. And what did Hillel tell him? He said, don't do to thy neighbor what you wouldn't want him to do to you. He says, this is the entire Torah. So the Maimonides learns as follows. He says, it doesn't mean love thy neighbor as thyself, that everything that would you do for yourself, you should do for your neighbor. He says, it doesn't mean that. He says, what it does mean is everything that you would want your neighbor to do for you, or everything that you would expect your neighbor to do for you, you should do for them. Every way that you would expect to be treated, you should treat others. So, for example, if you were walking in the desert and your neighbor had the bottle of water, a reasonable person would not expect their neighbor or their friend to give them the water, and their friend should die and they should live. A reasonable person would understand the other person's life comes first. So therefore, it would not fall under this precept. The same thing, if your neighbor bought their friend a car, you would not expect your neighbor to buy you a car. If, however, your neighbor was making a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah, your neighbor would expect you to knock at their door and say mazel tov, to say, can I put you up, to maybe bring over a gift. That's something you would expect them to do. And therefore, you can expect it back from them. Whatever you would expect them, how you would like to be treated in a certain situation, that's how you should treat the other party. And that's really an incredible standard for almost any social situation. How I would expect to be treated in this situation, whenever you're in that situation where you know how, what is the ultimate standard, the gold standard, how to treat somebody else? How would I like to be treated in this situation? That's how I should treat the other person. So according to Maimonides, and this is how Rambam Paskins in Hilchos Avol, when he talks about treating the sick, visiting the sick, he says, so when you would be sick, would you appreciate if people visited you? Then you have to visit others. Would you, by your wedding, would you like people to come? You should be going to their wedding, etc. So therefore, let's go back to our cases. How would you like to be treated? You were running a school, or rather you brought your children to a school, right? And the principal would tell you, I'm sorry, Mr. So-and-so, but you know, you wear a striped shirt, and we really don't like people who wear striped shirts. Would you be hurt? Would you think he was being reasonable? If you would think he was being discriminatory and unreasonable, then you have no right to refuse that person either. Or alternatively, if it was you who had fallen in love with a girl who was Sephardi or Ashkenazi, and you were worthy and you were capable and you had the necessary individual requirements, and the father-in-law said to you, I'm sorry, I can't because of the color of your skin, and you would feel that he was unreasonable, then that would be v'haftal re'echa kamocha, according to the Rambam. So clearly, this is a very personal, you know, it's a personal level. And everybody has to weigh it on their own level. And it's a very individualistic thing. Some people are more sensitive. Some people are less sensitive. Some people look at these matters, you know, it depends on cultural. It's very much dependent on your background. You know, Americans look at these issues with, you know, a big grain of salt, certainly if you're second generation or third generation. And there are people who come from a more European background or certainly a more Israeli background who look at these things and would recoil even on an individual basis. So these are issues where they're sort of self-regulating and they're personal. And ultimately, you have to be honest with yourself. How would you react in that situation? So this would be one area what we would have to look at before, you know, when we judge it. And another area where we would have to weigh on seriously is there is a big area in halacha called Lo Tiyah Kekorach Vadaso. And that is the area of machlokas, which is sadly, it's a halacha in the Torah that's brought by most poskim, which says that there is an isser. In most Jewish communities, we would not believe that this isser actually exists. But there is an isser of a machlokas, of fighting, of disagreement, of the lack of harmony, and of sinas chinam, of hatred for another person. And the both isurei derais and the chamer, it says the second base of Migdash was destroyed because of it. And it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, a Talmud in Sanhedrin. And the Talmud says is that when Korach started his machlokas, so it says Moshe went to Dasan v'Aviram, and he implored them, please, to back down and not to start a fight. Now, here's what's interesting. Dasan v'Aviram were bad guys. They were very, very bad guys. And they had a long history with Moshe. When Moshe was a princeling in Egypt, they reported him to the Pharaoh, and they tried to get him killed, and Moshe had to flee for his life because of them. They then come, this was Beta, they then see them again. We then fast forward some 80-odd years, and we see them again now joining Korach, now fomenting an uprising against Moshe. And Moshe goes hat in hand to these two evil and despicable people who tried to get him killed, imploring them, pleading with them, importuning them to back down from this machlokas. So the Gemara shows the extent that Moshe Rabbeinu, the scribe of the Torah, right, the man who brought us the Decalogue, who ascended the Holy Mount, what he went to the most vile of people to prevent the machlokas. And when we think of it and we say, so many of these rejections, which are so, people reject on such arbitrary basis, and the hurt and the wars that it creates among families and among communities, and we see the extent that Moshe went, and we say, why aren't we as communities and individuals more machmir on this Issur D'oraisa when it comes to things like Sukkos, like Esrig? We could spend hours on Sukkos and Esrig and Chol of Yisrael, etc., etc. But on Issuri D'oraisa, like Machlokas and Sinas Chinam, when was the last time you heard somebody says, I have a Chumrah in Sinas Chinam, I have a Chumrah in Machlokas, which brings us to discrimination in yeshivas, in shidduchim, etc.? This would be two halachic basis for discrimination. Now, I'd like to end with a thought, a moral basis as well as a halachic basis for discrimination. And that is, we have a halacha, it says, ger lo sana. We should not cause aggravation to a convert. And the Torah teaches us, Kigerim hayisem be'eretz Mitzrayim, you were converts in the land of Mitzrayim, you suffered greatly. And this suffering should enlighten you and make you more sensitive to the pain of others. And the Gemara teaches us a valuable lesson that very often we see personal failure as a write-off. And we all have personal failure. We all look back at our lives and we say we failed here and we failed there and we suffered. But the Gemara teaches us that this failure can often be a platform for personal growth. And the Gemara says how? Because when we fail, it makes us very often more aware of the sensitivity that other people have, their vulnerabilities and their suffering. So when we look at a stranger, at a ger, and we say, this is a person who's suffering and I know it because I was once a stranger. So we have to learn from our suffering and therefore be more in tune with theirs. In fact, the Chinuch in the Sefer HaMitzvah says, not only a ger, but he says that any stranger who comes to your community, it's a mitzvah to welcome them with open arms because of the fact that we learned from Egypt how sensitive and scary it is to be a stranger in a community. So if we do not have a sensitivity towards it, so we are basically looking back at events that we should have learned in our lives, how to become greater characters from it, and we are not learning from our life experiences. And the Chinuch says, and that's a sin. So let me share with you a story that's relevant to this week's Parsha. The Beis HaLevi, who was the grandfather of Yeshiva Be'er Soloveitchik. His name was Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik. He lived in the 1800s, and he was a rabbi in Brisk in Poland. What happened was the Russians had invaded a part of Poland, and they had been beaten back. They had been there for 5 years and been beaten back by the Polish army. And after there was a great victory, 5 years of servitude to the Russian army, he was asked to speak in front of a group of Polish generals and noblemen. And he got up, may have been this week's parsha, and this is what he said. He said, you know, the Russians were sadists. They hated the Jews. Under the Tsars, they hated the Jews for hundreds of years. So he said there was a particular Russian sadist, a general, and he would announce he was coming to a particular, you know, prominent Jewish family for dinner one night. So that night, the family, the days before, they prepared and they made a beautiful meal. And the Russian general walked in with a few of his soldiers, and it was a beautiful meal spread out there. They had a turkey and beef, etc. And he sat down. He said, "I would like some cheese and wine." And they hadn't. It was a meat meal. They hadn't prepared any cheese. They said, "We don't have cheese." He said, "Take out the Jew and beat him." And they would take the guy out and really give him malchus. They'd beat him to a pulp. The next week, he announced he was going to another prominent family. So they prepared an entire meal of cheese and wine and fruit. He comes there. He looks at the cheese and wine. He says, "Where's the fish?" They say, "Fish? We didn't." He said, "Beat the Jew up." The next week, he announced he's coming to another family. So they prepared fish and cheese to be safe. He came and he said, "Where's the rib roast?" They beat the fellow to a pulp again. The fourth week he came, there was nothing on the table. So he said to this new prominent family, "Where's?" So the fellow said to him, "Listen, I know you're just coming to beat me up. So why prepare the food? I know. So just beat me up. Let's do away with all the fineness of the." So the Beis Halevi said, he said, why did Yosef have to be a slave for so many years? Why did he have to servitude, first by Potiphar, then by Potipharah, and then in the dungeons before he actually became the Archbishop of Egypt? He said, because before you can rule, you have to have felt the pain of servitude. So he told the Polish nobleman, he said, "You felt the whip of the evil of, you felt the boot, the heel of Russian servitude for 5 years. So now please be kind to your subjects, i.e. the Jews." So I think that as Jews, nobody, or I shouldn't say nobody, few nations have suffered under racial prejudice, under discrimination as much as we have. Most certainly recently, when we look at the whole doctrine of German racial, you know, the Jews were outlawed, beaten, stripped of every right, of their possessions. So who has to be more sensitive to this than us? Aren't each of us, each one of us has a history in our families of being the Joseph, having gone through this? Doesn't each of us have to take that lesson on a moral point of view of Ger Lo Sane? We understand the suffering of the subjugated and take that into our lives. So therefore, from a halachic point of view, of a haftal ariyacha kamocha, from the isra of machlokes, as well as from the moral point of view, which the Torah requires us to learn from the lessons, these would all require us, I believe, and this is not a halachic opinion, this is for discussion purposes only, I am not coming here to paskin anything, ask your local rabbi, to tell us that discrimination, certainly both halachically and from a moral point of view, would be very problematic. Thank you.
You are listening to Headlines, Halachic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please call 212-769-1925 with your questions and comments. That's 212-769-1925. You can also email us.
If you are enjoying tonight's radio show, please make sure to read David Lichtenstein's important and innovative new book of the same title as this broadcast, Headlines, Halakhic Debate of Current Events, published by OU Press. embark on a fascinating journey through Halakha on some of the most important and controversial breaking issues of the day. Debates of current events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please call 212-769-1925 with your questions and comments. That's 212-769-1925. You can also email us at info@talklinecommunications.com.
And we're going to get to your phone calls. 212-769-1925. That's 212-769-1925. If you're on the line, we're going to get to your phone calls. You want to email us, info@talklinecommunications.com. That's info@talklinecommunications.com. You'll get through to Headlines with your host, David Lichtenstein, and fascinating topics on halakhic contemporary issues. That's 212-769-1925, or email if the lines are busy. A wonderful way to get through, info@talklinecommunications.com. And we go back to David Lichtenstein, and your phone call is coming up in just a few moments.
Okay, so I wanted to add a few interesting discussions by tshuvos from previous rabbis about this topic. So here is a tshuva from the son-in-law of the No Debi Yehuda. The No Debi Yehuda was a very prominent posek, perhaps the greatest decisor of his generation. He lived approximately 250 years ago. And his son-in-law was called Rabbi Yosef of Pozna. And he was asked the following question. He said there was a cantor who had joined a congregation. And the cantor was irreligious. And he did not eat kosher. And he did not keep Shabbos. And it created a big hubbubaloo in the community. How could we have a cantor who neither keeps Shabbos nor keeps kosher? In fact, the rabbi who wrote to him, tongue in cheek, said to him on this thing, he said, Shimon's, his name was Shimon, Dorish kol esin shebetora, esa chazir, ukshabola es Hashem alokechatira pirish. He was not fearful of God at all. And what did he answer him? He said, mutav lahamid selam behechel milahachzik b'machlokas. He said, it's better to put a cross in the Hechel, a cross in a Beis HaMikdash, than to have a machlokis in a shul. He said, so rather have a chazan, a cantor, who doesn't eat kosher and doesn't keep Shabbos, than to start a war in the shul. And I find this, honestly, when I saw it, I was astonished. But, you know, that's how we paskins. Reb Moshe Feinstein brings a psak, not nearly as radical as this, but he talks about a case where there was an intermarried couple who had children, and they sent them to a yeshiva where they agreed to keep all the rules and they were taken in by another couple, and they agreed to keep all the rules of the yeshiva. Now, you could imagine that this yeshiva was less than happy to have, children of intermarried couple there, et cetera. It didn't necessarily, you know, make for the best PR for this, ultra-right-wing school. And Rabbi Feinstein Paskin, he said, as long as the children on their own are willing to keep halacha and are willing to do, you know, as told, and would not be injurious to the other children in the class, we do not have a right to look at their parentage or the class that which they came from, which goes right back to the concept of discrimination which the definition of discrimination was looking back at the class or the general grouping where this person comes from. So I found that Rav Moshe's psak would be very relevant for this discussion. Now, there is, by the way, in the concept of there is an one other reading of another reading of of a haftal arecha kamocha, which would make things a little bit more difficult. And that is, Rashi and others learn in a negative way. And they say, v'haftal arecha kamocha means not do as to others as you would want them to do unto you, but don't do unto others as you wouldn't want others to do unto you. They learn it in a negative precept. Don't do unto others. And why would this be a little bit more problematic? Because let's say, for example, you had a school and a child applied and you felt that this child didn't necessarily fit into the overall feel of the school, even though the child himself may have been meritorious. So you wanted to know if you were going to be over the Isser of a haftal arecha kamocha. So according to the Rambam, you would not want to be rejected, and therefore you would be over the haftal arecha kamocha. But if you learn like Rashi, and it's a negative, don't do unto others, well, by not accepting him, you're not doing anything. You're just sort of sitting there with your hands tied. You're just not signing an acceptance. So the lack of doing anything is, in other words, by not doing anything, I am not necessarily abrogating any laws. I'm just not doing anything. If to do something injurious would be an abrogation of a haftal arecha kamocha, the absence of a deed would, on the other hand, not be over of a haftal arecha kamocha. Now there is very interesting. When we look at the isser of lo yiyak korach v'adaso, the isser we see that almost all Rishonim learned that it is an isser daraisa, even though it's not brought in the Shulchan Aruch. But Rabbeinu Yonah learns that kol hamachzik b'machlokis omer b'lav. That is not only somebody who begins a machlokis, but he says anybody who sort of supports the machlokis, joins the machlokis, is the greater body of a machlokis. So if you're part of a body, you're in a shul that there is a machlokis, and you haven't started the machlokis, but you're part of the greater corpus of the machlokis, that would also be over the isser of lo yiyake korach v'adaso. And the Orach Chaim defines it even more than that. He says on the isser of lo sisna sachicha b'vavecha, do not dislike your brother, do not hate your brother in your heart. He discusses the following concept. He says, what happens if you say, you know, I don't dislike you, I just want separate but equal. How does halacha look at separate but equal? I think you're wonderful, and therefore I think you should have your own school. I love you, but you have your schools and I have my schools. Doesn't mean that I don't love you. Separate but equal. So the Supreme Court ruled that separate but equal is discrimination. How would halacha view separate but equal? So the Orach Chaim says, it says, lo sisna esachicha belvavecha. So he says, do not hate your brother. So he says, why does it say your brother? Why doesn't it say your neighbor? So he says, anything that diminishes from brotherliness is considered hatred. And so he says, if two brothers, if it's not an act of brotherliness, it rises to the level of sinna, which means separate but equal is not a sign of brotherliness. Two brothers would not say to each other, you know, I respect you, I love you, don't come to my wedding. I respect you, I love you, don't come to my house. He says anything that rises to the level that would not be brotherliness, that's considered dislike as well, and rises to the level of sinas chinam, which really puts a very high level, a high bar of on us. Okay, go ahead, Zev. I understand you have some callers.
Headlines, halakhic debates of current events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please call 212-769-1925 with your questions and comments. That's 212-769-1925. You can also email us at info@talklinecommunications.com. That's info@talklinecommunications.com.
Dave in Irvington, New Jersey, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Some conversations.
Yes, good evening. Pleasure to speak to you, Rabbi Lichtenstein. Pleasure to speak with you. Just let me just turn down my radio.
Thank you. It's Mr. Lichtenstein, and thank you.
Yes, I'm back. Rabbi, I mean, I'm really enjoying this discussion. Let me tell you, I'm a non-Jewish Black American. You know, love the Jewish people. Have many friends in the Jewish community, religious and non-religious alike. Obviously, it's not right to discriminate against somebody on the basis of religion, skin color, height, weight, you know, what have you. But I believe, and tell me if you agree, there are times when we need to discriminate against human beings, you know, regardless of their color or their background, if they're doing something that is illegal or immoral. For example, a drug dealer. You know, we have every right, you know, to throw that individual out of the community because... Mm-hmm.
If I can just say, it's going to be succinct, a lot of people waiting to speak to David, so if you can just sum up your point.
I would agree with you, but, the definition of discrimination, as Webster's describes it, is when you judge a person based on his group or class. When we judge a person on his individual actions, that's not discrimination anymore. So when you tell me somebody is a drug dealer, by that very definition, that's not discrimination anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Anyway, thank you for a good question. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Okay, let's go to Jeff in Flatbush. Jeff, you have a question. Go ahead.
Shalom Aleichem. I have a comment about discrimination. I would like to talk to you about two specific cases, even though I know about more, concerning a discrimination of Jewish balabusters, Jewish housewives, getting certain jobs. I'm going to tell you, I know a case in Borough Park, a frumma lady. She wanted to help her family. She married. You know, her husband's having trouble, so she went to a certain big, enormous supermarket. She goes there, she asks for a job, and they tell her point blank, we don't hire Jewish women here, we only hire Mexicans. I'll tell you another story, another Jewish lady in Flatbush, or Midwood, if you call it. She went to two different supermarkets, she got the same story.
So your question for David Lichtenstein is?
But in one supermarket, she said to him, listen, please hire me. She said, no, we don't hire Jewish women, and if we hire you, we'd have to treat you differently than anybody else. So why should they treat her differently? They should treat everybody the same way, in a good manner. But they should hire Jewish women. Why not? If the Jewish woman wants to be a cashier in a supermarket, why can't they give her a job? It's only for Mexicans. This is not discrimination against Yidden.
I agree.
I think something should be done about it.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I'm not about doing anything. I'm just talking from a halacha and a moral point of view, and I agree with you.
Anyway, thank you for your phone call. We appreciate it. Thank you. Good vach to you. And here's an email question coming in. What constitutes a machlokas in a shul? Is a member who notifies the board that another member is a convicted rapist and a danger to the females in the shul wrong, or is a rabbi who throws the messenger out of the shul starting a machlokas?
So, you know, a machlokas against, you know, I think notwithstanding the tshuva of the son-in-law of the Noida Yehuda, I mean, somebody who's a danger to the community or a known avarian clearly would is something that we have to do. I mean, there's we have to have law in the community. But I'm talking about if you look sadly in our community, you don't have to go much beyond Vas is Nias to see entire communities that are split over who leadership should be, et cetera. And these things don't rise to the levels of rapists or, you know, acts of violence, et cetera. It's just people who just can't get along. But I would be hard-pressed to say that throwing a rapist out of a shul would be considered machlokes. I would think that would be a danger to the public not to throw somebody like that out of a shul.
Okay, let's go to Naftali in Flatbush, very patiently waiting. Naftali in Flatbush, your turn. Go ahead, please.
Yes, very interesting program. I only heard part of it. I do have a question, though. First of all, I don't think halacha is always focused on morality. So when you hear someone talk about moral, it's kind of reminiscent of the conservative movement when they were talking about kashrus, not only to look at kosher laws, but also to take into account discrimination and labor and wage laws. So I think there's a little danger there. The other thing that I have problems with, I live with my son, I have Habrusa and Afyomi, who's more into normative rules. You find the Gemara, Shvulachanim Hamar, Amadam Hamar. Abba Ramavinu says that it's not appropriate for a baruch to be connected to an aror. And even when you look at art scroll, very often, to be politically correct, they don't translate everything exactly as we find in the Talmud. So for someone to say that we don't find discrimination, Talmud probably is replete with aspects of consideration. Kahanim are supposed to marry miyuchasim. We just had in Afyemi a whole bunch of gemaras about certain people who don't have two parents who are converts, etc. So I think there's a lot more about discrimination than you're letting on as far as what's in halacha and what's in our learning.
I'm going to let Deborah respond to you.
So let me respond, okay? I quoted, when I speak about morals, I'm quoting a Sefer HaChinuch, right, who says that the mitzvah of Ger Lo Sane is to teach us that we are supposed to be sensitive after we've been afflicted. We're supposed to be sensitive and use that in affliction to learn how to be sensitive to others, right? And I'm quoting the Beis Halevi using the story of Yosef. So I'm not quoting conservative rabbis, unless you believe the Beis Halevi or the Chinuch are conservative rabbis. Now, when you equally, you say morals as a poor, you know, use, the entire Musar movement, right, founded by Rabbi Yisrael Salant, is about morality. And isn't the entire Torah about morality? Isn't the Lashon HaRambam say, Leba kol ha-Torah kula ela lilmoid la'adam derech eretz? The whole purpose of the Torah is to teach a person derech eretz, the Lashon of the Rambam, right, at the end of Seder.
But that's not morality. No. That's a person's own. The Muslim movement, it's all about a person working on themselves. Morality is refined, like moral suasion and other things. If everything was about morality, why would there be different consequences? You talk about gerim, right? But yet the Gemara says that not everybody's supposed to marry the child of a ger. I just, you know, it seems to me that there are double standards, and I don't believe halacha focuses on morality. The way we're supposed to act, I consider myself a moral person. I wouldn't do certain things, but not because it's halacha that dictates it, but people have morality. But halacha is, sometimes there are hard choices in halacha that aren't always based on morality.
So let me respond to that again. How do you understand when the Gemara says, Hill says, when Hill was asked the question, he said, teach me the Torah. And he says, Amalei, Dalech sani lechavruch leisavid zui kol ha-Torah kula. Exact quote of a Gemara. What you don't want others to do, don't do to another. This is the entire Torah. An exact quote of Hillel HaZaken, unless you consider him a conservative rabbi.
No, I want you to know I did not hear you. I told you I called in the middle, so I didn't know you were quoting the Chinuch of Beis Halevi. I just know that the conservative movement is very much into morality, so that's kind of a buzzword that gets me a little concerned. But if you were looking at it from a different perspective, then call it a vote to you. And Hillel, obviously, he was trying to get this person to recognize that he could, all different shatim in that, that he could do the Torah, and if he was a robber, if you're going to steal from somebody, you want it, when it's done, so you'll learn. But of course, he wasn't telling him that, come and learn with me. After that, I'm sure the person sat down to learn all the Torah. But you talk about discrimination, there is discrimination going on. Let's be real about it.
I'll let Deborah respond to you, then we have a lot of other people waiting. So you made some good points, and let Deborah respond, then we're going to go on to the other callers.
I just think that when he says, we've quoted numerous halachas, v'haftal arecha kamoicha, where the Rambam said, defines v'haftal arecha kamoicha, do unto others as you would like them to do unto you, right? We have Hillel HaZaken who says, madalach sani l'chavrach le'savi, that's how Rashi learned and Tysus learned, don't do unto others as you wouldn't want them to do unto you.
These are the, and he says, Zuhi Kala Tairakula. If you find exceptions to this rule, you have to look at those exceptions with a magnifying glass. And for example, you say that there's a, the Gemara says not to marry a ger, right? The Gemara in two places. And what is the reason for that? But there's an exact reason for that. A ger is somebody who's coming from a situation. We all know that, you know, there's a, in credit, there's a rule, past credit, right? Anybody who's been in the credit business knows that past behavior often dictates future behavior, right? So it's a reasonable person recognizes that somebody who's had a major change in their life and they've gone from one religion to another religion, they very well wake up one morning and revert back to where they came from or actually change to a third religion. So the Gemara just says for somebody to marry a ger, it's an infractious. It's, there is danger involved, and it's not for the weak of heart. And that's common sense. But that's not a question of a lack of morality. It's good advice. And Ramesh has a tshuva on it. He says, of course, there's no isser. But he says, you have to have a strong stomach because you have to have strong emunah and betachin, as well as understanding the psychology. Very often, people who make such definitive and such wild, such major movements in their lives are coming from a psychological place. You have to understand where they come from. But that's not discrimination. That's understand who you are joining forces with. That is not about discrimination. If you were to partner in business with this person, I would say just understand psychologically where that person is coming from. But I revert to say that the Torah, based upon Hillel and Shammai, Hillel, the way Rashi learns, the way the Rambam learns, the way the Ramban learns, is totally morally right. And like the Rambam says, Lebok Kola Torah Ella Lomoid La'adam Derech Eretz, and Derech Eretz Kadma La'Torah.
Henry, thank you for a good call. We appreciate it. Good vach.
Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events.
And we're getting to more of your phone calls. Please keep it brief and to the point. Let's go to Yaakov in Brooklyn. Go ahead, Yaakov in Brooklyn.
Good luck. I want to mention about the translation of the term Reyecha. Even though we should be diplomatic and act with humanity towards all people, generally speaking, my understanding is that Reyecha does not Shechinecha. Reyecha does not mean your neighbor. It means your peer or your fellow Jew. Comments.
Reb David, did you hear the question?
Yeah, I responded. V'haft l'riecha means l'chavrach.
Right, to a fellow Jew, or to a ger,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Or to a ger tzedek, but otherwise it does not halachically apply. Riecha means a fellow Jew or a convert.
Right, I'm not discussing, right now I'm discussing intra-Jewish. Extra-Jewish, as far as the greater community, I'm not really discussing. I'm talking about the racism that or discrimination that we see among ourselves. Outside of ourselves is another discussion, which I'm more than glad to have, but it's not really the topic of tonight's conversation.
Anyway, thank you for your phone call. We appreciate that, and we're going to squeeze in a couple more phone calls. Time is...
You are listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please call 212-769-1925 with your questions and comments. That's 212-769-1925. You can also email us at info@talklinecommunications.com. That's info@talklinecommunications.com. If you are enjoying tonight's radio show, please make sure to read David Lichtenstein's important and innovative new book of the same title as this broadcast, Headlines, Halakhic Debate of Current Events, published by OU Press. Embark on a fascinating journey through Halakha on some of the most important and controversial breaking issues of the day. Available at your local Jewish booksellers and at Amazon.com.
Yaakov, go ahead. You have a question for David Lichtenstein.
Into the two of the topics that you mentioned. One is about marriage between Sfardim and Ashkenazim, and the other will be about the cantor. Now, between Ashkenazim and Sfardim, there are quite a bit of cultural differences. I'm not talking about skin color differences, cultural. There are quite a bit of different minhagim. There are people, my daughter, we as parents didn't mind. My daughter didn't want to date a Sephardi because she didn't want to pick up the other minhagim. She grew up with certain minhagim. Those are the ones she wanted to stay with. So that was the only reason. But we wouldn't have minded. Once a shidduch is made and once the wedding is called for and parents don't go, that's a very big avera, no doubt about it. That is insane. But not dating them to begin with for cultural reasons, that's logical. Now, as far as the cantor is concerned, there's no Orthodox Jewish shul worth its salt that would hire a Reform cantor or an atheistic cantor who's publicly known to be such in the whole entire world. If you can name one, I'll eat my hat.
So, I'm responsible. On the first point, I agree with you that is, again, not discrimination because you're saying the boy at hand, he could be the loveliest boy, but his minhagim are different, and therefore he's not relevant. So I agree with you. I'm talking about where you say we don't like him because of his skin color. That's where it would be discrimination. If you say it has nothing to do with his skin color, he could be the exact same skin color. He just has different minhagim. So you're saying it's based on individual merit, not based on a general class. That's what you're saying, and I agree with that.
There's some svadim who are whiter than white.
Yeah, so I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying, but there are times we make the judgment not based on minhagim, but based on general class. That would be discrimination. As far as the second, I agree with you, too. I'm saying that I don't know of a shul like that, but I'm pointing out to you that the chaymer of machleikis is such that in the case where a cantor like this was hired, the son-in-law of the Neid Behuda, who I believe also was the Rebbe of Reb Kiva Eger, paskid not to fire him because of the chaymer of the isser of machleikis, and I merely expressed my astonishment that I had no clue that the chaymer of the isser of machleikis was so great. And additionally, I just expressed an astonishment. I said, I know of nobody ever. I've never met anybody in my life. I've met many people who say I'm machmir and this and on that. I never met anybody in my life who said I'm machmir on the iser of lo yia kekorach vadasai.
Yeah, I hear you. But I have a very big problem with that because
I am machmir on sinas chinam.
I got it. That chazan is a bad influence on the community. Besides the fact they don't have to fire him in a machlekes, they can nicely call him into the office and nicely, quietly ask him to leave. They don't have to make a machlekes.
That's a kasha for maisa. Like they say.
Oh, but it's a true maisa.
I'm quoting to you a tshuva that is an actual tshuva, and his lashon is mutav lahamid selam behechel velo lahachzik b'machlekes. Astonishing language, no?
Are there rabbanim who would disagree with that?
I'm just.
It's very mudna. It's a very like a shvera medrash. It's very mudna.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, thank you for your phone call.
Pleasure.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll go back. We're just coming to the end of the program. I know, Reb David, you have some closing thoughts.
I would just, you know, as a community, we said somebody mentioned something that about, you know, he said, Losikum, Vahaflarech Kamocha is about, you know, is Lechavercha, and he's right. But I would like to point out something that is something also not mentioned, and that is that the Yerushalmi Nedarim brings this Gemara. V'haftla re'echa kamocha, zek klau gadol b'torah. And the Gemara there is ma'asev something that a lot of people don't know. Benaze omer, yeshli klau gadol mizeh, a greater b'sef l're'echa kamocha. And what is that? Ki b'tselem elokim asa es ha'adam. So what does the Pnei Moshe say? He says, why is it Zeklau Gadol, Pnei Moshe, the great Mefarish on the Yerushalmi? He says, because B'Tselem Aleikim Ases Adam refers to every Adam. We are all made B'Tselem Aleikim. And from the story of the Beis Halevi, we see that when the Beis Halevi is going to the Russian nobleman, what is he telling them? He's saying that Yosef had to be, Yosef HaTzadik had to be thrown, in this week's parsha, he said he had to suffer to be, so that he should know how to treat the Egyptians when he became king. And certainly they did not fall under the precept of Ahavta L'Reicha Kamecha.
So again, I started this by saying I am not paskining la halacha, and everybody has their rabbanim. But wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if we, as a community, were able to take our 2,000 years of suffering, our 2,000 years of suffering? The Gemara says that Avram Avinu, the Masechtas Avodah Zarah of Avram Avinu, was 400 dafim long, much longer, was considerably longer than ours, six times the length of our Masechtas Avodah Zarah. And the Maral explains that he says that since Avram Avinu struggled with the concept of Avodah Zarah, he was the first man who was a monotheist. So by him, he brought monotheism to the world. So by him, Avodah Zarah was so that's why it was so long. To us as Jews, we now, our suffering, 2,000 years, we could write the book on Ger Lo Sana. Which means, wouldn't it be wonderful if 3,500 years after the words Ger Lo Sana were written, we could write a Masechta on Ger Lo Sana? And what would that Masechta, 3,500 years after Yosef went through what he went through, we could write our Masechta about Ger Lo Sana? And what would that Masechta look like? We would write about 3,000 years, or certainly 23. There was a Catholic bishop by the name of Edward Flannery. He wrote a book called The Anguish of the Jews, 23 centuries of Jewish anti-Semitism. And he goes through all the different, from the beginning of time, what we've suffered, and all the different generational abuses, the dislocations, strippings of human dignities, of properties, of murders, of rape, of pogroms, of disinheritances, of governments, of legislations, of loss of rights, of the pales of settlements. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could take all those abuses and experiences and say, we now know what it means to suffer, and we know what it means to be abused, and we know better than anybody how sensitive we have to see when we see others abused. Whatever Yosef went through 3,500 years ago, whatever the Beis HaLevi say, we can add 2,300 years of abuse to that. Whatever Ger Lo Sana means, we have been sensitized by 2,300 years of lessons. And what a Kiddush Hashem it would be if when we see somebody going through suffering, we would stop by and we say, I know what you feel like. I want to lend my shoulder to your pain. I think that, wouldn't that be beautiful? The Medrash says that why was Moshe chosen to lead our people? So the Medrash says in Shemos, Moshe was a princeling. Vayhi bayamim mahem, it was in those days. And he went out, and what did he see? And he saw the suffering, vayar b'sivlosam. And, you know, my father-in-law, Rabbi Mendelowitz, Rabbi Fraga Feivel's son, he said, one thing you have to talk about. He said, you have to talk about the concept, when you talk about discrimination, of nosei ba'olim chaveiro. And what does nosei ba'olim chaveiro mean? He says, when you see another person suffering, he says that Rabbi Rucham always used to speak about that, to step into the other person's shoes and to feel it. Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen because he stepped vayar b'sivlosam. He saw their suffering, he saw their tears, and he cried together with them, and he said, chaval li alechem, mi yitain musi alechem. He says, I saw their suffering, I wish I could be in your place. It would be so beautiful. We would be such a Kiddush Hashem if we could say, we could take our experiences, ghettos, Holocaust, say, I know your pain. Let's stand up and shout. Nobody has been discriminated against us. We are the Bucky. We are the polymath. We are the Baal of this Masechta. We know this Masechta better than anybody. We are the Mara de Asra. We should be out there saying, we own this Masechta. let's stand side by side with those who suffer and make it Kiddush Hashem. It's our opportunity.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Reb David Lichtenstein. A fascinating program. And next week, people can continue. If you didn't get through tonight, you'll have another opportunity next week with another fascinating discussion relating to halacha and some contemporary issues. Shavua Tov. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please join us again next week for another edition of Headlines.